This is Human Behavior by Bjork. You've got to listen to the words, otherwise it isn't particularly funny. So here we go. This is a piece called Couch Potato by Bela Fleck. It comes across as rather funny, but I can't say exactly why it's funny. So here's Couch Potato by Bela Fleck. Thank you. Have a famous song from the Pirates of Penzance by Arthur Sullivan and William Gilbert. The same tune is used later on by Tom Lehrer, who sang all the known chemical elements to this tune. But this one is just I am the very model of a modern major general.
I am the very model of a modern major general. I've information, vegetable, animal, and mineral. I know the kings of England and Dakota fights historical, from Marathon to Waterloo in order categorical. I am very well acquainted too with matters mathematical. I understand equations both the simple and quadratical. About polynomial theorem, I am teeming with a lot of news. With many cheerful facts about the square of the hypotenuse.
Many cheerful facts about the square of the hypotenuse. Many cheerful facts about the square of the hypotenuse.
I am very good at integral and differential calculus. I know the scientific names of beings and animalculus. In short, in matters vegetable, animal, and mineral, I am the very model of a modern major general. I know our mythic history, King Arthur's and Sir Caradoc's. The answer hard acrostics have a pretty taste for paradox. In court in elegiacs, all the crimes of Helicabalus. In conics, I can floor peculiarities parabolous. I can tell undoubted Raphael some Derrida's and Sophonies. I know the croaking chorus from the frogs of Aristophanes. And I can hum a fugue of which you've heard the music's dinner for.
Dinner for.
And whistle all the airs from that infernal nonsense pinafore.
And whistle all the airs from that infernal nonsense pinafore. And whistle all the airs from that infernal nonsense pinafore. And whistle all the airs from that infernal nonsense pinafore.
Then I can write a washing bill in Babylonic uniform and tell you every detail of Caractacus's uniform. In short, in matters vegetable, animal, and mineral, I am the very model of a modern major general.
In short, in matters vegetable, animal, and mineral, he is the very model of a modern major general.
In fact, when I know what is meant by mammalian and ravelin, when I can tell at sight a mouse a rifle from a javelin, when such affairs are sorties and surprises I'm more wary at, and when I know precisely what is meant by commissariat, when I have learned what progress has been made in modern gunnery, when I know more of tactics than a novice in a nunnery, in short, I have a smattering of elemental strategy. I have it. You'll say I bet a major general and never strategy.
You'll say I bet a major general and never strategy.
For my military knowledge, though I am plucky and adventurous, has only been but down to the beginning of the century. But still, in matters vegetable, animal, and mineral, I am the very model of a modern major general. Now that I have introduced myself, I should like to have some idea of what's going on.
Oh, Papa. Permit me. I'll explain in two words. We propose to marry your daughters.
Dear me.
It's so beautiful.
but you mustn't do that. May I ask? This is a picturesque uniform, but I'm not familiar with it. What are you?
We are all single gentlemen.
Yes, I gathered that. Anything else?
No, nothing else.
Papa, don't believe them. They are pirates. The famous pirates of Penzance.
The pirates of Penzance? I have often heard of them.
All except this gentleman, who was a pirate once, but who is out of his indentures today, and who means to lead a blameless life evermore.
But wait a bit! I object to pirates as sons-in-law.
We object to major generals as fathers-in-law. But we waive that point. We do not press it. We look over it.
Ah, an idea. And do you mean to say that you would deliberately rob me of these, the sole remaining props of my old age, and leave me to go through the remainder of my life unfriended, unprotected, and alone?
Well, yes, that's the idea.
Tell me, have you ever known what it is to be an orphan?
Oh, that's it all! Here we are again.
I ask you, have you ever known what it is to be an orphan?
Orphan?
Yes, orphan. Have you ever known what it is to be one?
I say orphan.
Orphan! Orphan! Orphan!
I don't think we quite understand one another. When you said orphan, did you mean orphan a person who has lost his parents, or orphan frequently?
I beg pardon, I see what you mean. Frequently.
You said orphan frequently.
No. Only once.
Exactly. You said often, frequently, only once.
A few years ago, we had at the Community Arts Center a famous musician comedian called Victor Borg. Actually, he'd been doing his comedy music act for several decades. He was Dutch, but I think he was settled down in the U.S., and this is from an album of his, and he's making fun of Mozart operas. So it's called Mozart Opera by Borg.
Now I would like to take you to the opera where you are going to hear a Mozart opera, which is nothing but an opera written by Mozart. This is an opera in one act, and it begins when the curtain rises. Otherwise, you couldn't see a thing. The stage setting is a kind of a forest. There are two large trees, which of course indicates the forest. It's a kind of a small forest, but it's a forest. First, the tenor comes in. He is supposed to meet his soprano, as they usually call those ladies. But she's a little late this particular season, so he hides himself behind one of the trees in order to surprise her when she comes in a little later, which he does. When she arrives, she can't find him because he is occupied behind one of the trees. Now he's with a knife carving her name into the scenery. Now she doesn't know that he is there, but well, as a matter of fact, she must know it because she saw it during rehearsals. Either she pretends that she doesn't know it, or she is just plain stupid. Or whatever it is, she gets across the stage somehow and takes place behind the other tree, which, for the occasion, hides her to a certain extent. Now, the chorus comes in, but nobody knows why, except Mozart, and he is dead. And that's just too bad. Next, her father comes in, and he is a very old man, primarily because she is a very old soprano. And he is very angry because apparently she is not his daughter. Now, this has nothing to do with the opera. I found that out myself. And that's what we call research. Anyway, he decides that He has had enough of her, so he tells her to die, and that's exactly what she's going to do. And with that, the opera ends, and people can go home. Now I take you to the opera house, where you hear the conductor's footsteps when he enters the orchestra pit. Here he comes. Yeah, he walks sideways. And this is the overture. This, ladies and gentlemen, was the first part of the overture. Now you hear the second part, and that's exactly the same. Extra bloop we have in case we shoot one short of bloops. But that has never happened, so we have a lot of bloops left over. Now the curtain rises and the tenor arrives. He's a little tall fellow. He comes in. He comes in from the left in a single file. Goes behind the tree right away. Now the leading lady arrives. She is supposed to fill the part of the soprano. Now she not only fills it, she overflows it a little bit. He's a big he's a big soprano, that's what she is. She's what we call a messy soprano. She comes in a single pile. She also arrives backwards, but nobody notices the difference. She goes behind the other tree. She can hardly wait because... see, she is... She supposedly hasn't met him for a long time, so she is just... she's anxious. Now is the time for the chorus. The light is dimmed, so you can hardly see these people when they arrive, and that's why they're dressed in a kind of cheap underwear. Because there is no reason to spend a lot of money for costumes when you can't see them. Right? And that's the way the management of this theater feels about it, and that's the way it's gonna be. Here they come. Bread and butter. Now they're all in, and they fool around in the dark for a little while. This is a mixed chorus. Bread and butter. Now they're out, they get their money and go home. Next, a baritone comes in and sings, Toreador, Toreador. But he finds out that he's in the wrong opera. Now, the father comes in, the old man, and he is the basso.
Oh, What is the point of that?
Can a man get? Well, anyway, he has almost now told her what he had to say. And she understands him quite well. So now she prepares herself to die. But before she dies, she sings an aria, the so-called die aria. She seems very happy about it. She dies by stabbing herself between the two big trees.
Archie's Archives, and that's the end of the first half. Stay tuned for the rest.